listening to The Beauty of Our Weapons by M. Darusha Wayne. For more information, go to darusha.ca/weapons. Episode 4, Chapter 7. Dex managed to get a bite to eat before the squad meeting in M-City. Now that he lived halfway across the world from the rest of the team, he appreciated the fact that the meetings were held online. When he'd been living in America, though, it struck him as ridiculous. Particularly odd was the fact that until recently, he'd never met most of his colleagues in the physical world. He could have easily walked past any of them on the street and never recognized them. He linked into the squad room a few minutes early. He waved to Jay Shireishi, the new head of the Goon Squad. He had big shoes to fill after the retirement of Pat Malone, who'd been the lieutenant in charge of the street team for as long as Dex could remember. Malone had been an institution on the squad, and Shireishi could never truly replace the man. However, Dex thought that the younger man was rising to the challenge surprisingly well, and the transition had gone smoothly. He found himself a seat near the back of the room and smiled as he felt Annabelle slip in next to him. The whole squad knew that the two were a couple, but after the years that Annabelle had chased Dex, they were pleased that he'd finally accepted what they all saw as a foregone conclusion. Annabelle wasn't just a great cracker. She was as tenacious as any detective on the squad. Once she'd set her cap on Dex, the squad's numbers team had set low odds indeed on his being able to withstand her assault. As the room filled, Dex noticed an enormous man trying to catch his eye. He waved the giant over and the man introduced himself. "Hi," he said. "I'm Mac Larson, M-City Squad Lieutenant." "Anderson Dexter, but you can call me Dex. What brings you our way?" "You're running the Light of the Simulacrum case, right?" Larson asked.
"Yep," Dex said.
"Captain Jang asked me to sit in on the meeting," he said. "After all, it's sort of a joint case between my squad and hers."
"Is it?"
Dex asked. Annabelle elbowed Dex hard in the ribs and gave him a pointed look. "You know that I feel the M-City Squad ought to have its own detective division," Larson said. "Until that happens, I'm not giving up all connections to a case that came from my community, from the streets my squad patrols. The LOS are my people, detective. I'm not just going to hand over their problems and forget about them."
"Fine," Dex said. "You're free to read the case file, and I always keep them updated."
He smiled, then turned back to Annabelle. Larson nodded and smiled broadly.
"I will. Don't you worry about that."
He turned to walk away.
"You don't like him much," Annabelle said privately to Dex as they sat.
Dex shrugged. "It's nothing personal," he said. "I just don't need half a dozen eyes peeking over my shoulder. It's not my fault he's not a detective. He doesn't need to take his career frustrations out on me."
"All right, let's get on with it,"
Squad Captain Zahara Zhang called out from her lectern at the front of the room. Everyone stopped talking and focused their attention on her. "Everyone say hello to Mac Larson, lieutenant from the M-City Squad." Larson stood and waved at the crowd. "The lieutenant is liaising with us on Dex's new case. We'll get to that in a moment." She turned to Larson and said, "Thank you, Mac." He sat, and Dex rolled his eyes toward Annabelle.
"Liaising?" he whispered incredulously.
"Shut up," Annabelle whispered back. Next, Jay Shireishi gave a brief rundown on the week's activities on the street. It sounded like the usual mess, mainly keeping the peace among the folks who lived on the fringes of society, the people who didn't get housing with their jobs, if they're even employed. The fringe seemed to be increasing as people like Dex and Stella Bish gave up jobs with the firms, so there were now whole classes of people who didn't fall into the neat categories that the firms envisioned. There were the streeters, people living in abandoned old buildings, scavenging for food or eking out a living by selling scraps. Above them were the artists, writers, musicians, and other people who eschewed regular employment. They still had a hard scrabble, but there were a few privately owned and operated apartment buildings and enough people who supported live entertainment to keep them with roofs over their heads and food bricks in their bellies. And now there was a growing cohort of independents, people who were earning enough of a living from businesses in M-City to pay for a decent apartment. Liberté, the complex where Dex lived, was one of a handful in Europa which catered to independent contractors. More were being built all the time to house the physical bodies of people who spent more and more of their time in M-City. The Cubicle Men's street teams were also growing to meet the increasing demand, and Shireishi took his time reviewing his team's recent activities. After he was done, the captain asked for reports from the detectives. When it was his turn, Dex briefly described the vandalism at the Light of the Simulacrum Temple, then outlined the login issue that Stella Bish had reported.
"You think there's a connection?"
asked the captain, knowing how Dex's mind worked.
It's a possibility, he conceded. Particularly concerning as a theory, he shot a glance at Annabelle, who nodded silently, that Bish's issue isn't third-party involvement at all.
Explain, Captain Zhang demanded.
It's my theory, sir, Annabelle spoke up. It's possible that what Ms. Bish experienced was due to a serious, persistent malfunction in the Everywhere Net itself. The technicians in the room exploded in talk, while most of the others looked on in confusion.
If this is a result of a massive bug, Annabelle explained, then the whole system is at risk. Everything could just stop working, the same as it did for Ms. Bish.
Now there were gasps from all around the room.
It's just a theory for now, Dex said, but it could explain the troubles at the LOS Temple as well.
Hmm, the captain thought. Facing Annabelle, she said, look into it. It's your top priority, Lewis.
Larson, can you have your people compile a list of any anomalies they've encountered recently?
Sure, Larson said, but there's been a rash of shakedowns among the business community lately. A lot of those ended up in vandalism, broken code, and even lockouts. This is probably more of the same.
Could be, Captain Zhang said. Still, it's a good idea to keep our eyes on it. Matt, can we set up a joint case file for information or observations on online anomalies?
I'll get it done right away, he said, and shoot your group the link when it's up.
Thank you, the captain said. And everyone else, keep your eyes peeled in M-City and elsewhere online. It's too early to start worrying about it, but if there is a problem here, we need to be on top of it. If you spot anything, I want as much information as possible logged.
Lewis, she faced Annabelle again, keep on top of that file.
Sir, Annabelle agreed.
Okay, the captain said, effectively ending discussion on that topic. Anything else before we adjourn to the bars?
The squad was silent, and after a beat, Captain Zhang said, very good. Same time next week, people. Take care.
Dex and Annabelle joined the rest of the detectives and technical group at Three Card Monty's, the usual meeting place for that bunch after squad meetings. The street team had their own hangout, a nearby dive called Sally's Slipper. The captain tended to leave each group to their own devices. She understood the need to bond without an authority figure hanging around to overhear the scuttlebutt. However, Dex had learned that she was a music buff, and he often saw her at music events around Dam City. She was remarkably diligent in making it to Chemical Celeste's gigs. The general chat after the meeting was about Dex's cases, specifically Annabelle's theory about the bug.
I realize that this is just a possibility, Ginger Ayala was saying, her glass of chilled white wine dripping on the wood grain of Monty's bar. But if there's something wrong with the whole net, shouldn't we shift this issue over to the Everywhere Net Consortium?
We can't go to the firms with a half-baked story about a maybe bug in their system, John Ochoa countered.
There's no love lost between them and us, and if we start butting in on their turf, they could start making things very sticky for us.
But they are the ones responsible, Ayala argued, and they're the only ones who can fix it if it's a problem.
Sure, Annabelle said, but John's right. At least for now, it's just a possibility.
Unless we have some real proof, the firms aren't going to do anything but get pissed off at us for poking around in their code. And don't forget, there's plenty of stuff we do in there that they'd be very unhappy about. If we tell them about this, we'll be giving up a lot of our secrets. It's just too soon, Ginger.
The small, wiry woman grunted unhappily, but stopped pushing her point. She drained her wine glass, and a refill appeared quickly. She moved away from the bar and started talking to a couple of the other crackers on the team.
She's awfully quick to pass the buck, Ochoa said.
It would be the right thing to do, Annabelle said, if we were sure. But I'm not ready to risk it on a hunch, which is all it is at the moment.
Kind of wish I hadn't said anything, Dex said, dark and stormy in one hand, cigarette in the other. Especially with that wannabe Dick Larson there running his mouth off.
Captain would have kicked your ass if you'd withheld, Ochoa said.
True, Dex said, but I can take it. My ass is industrial strength.
The three laughed, and Annabelle reached out and goosed Dex. He yelped, and she and Ochoa laughed harder.
Apparently not tough guy, Ochoa said between guffaws.
Very funny, Dex said. I should sue for harassment or something.
Good luck, pal, Ochoa said. I should be so lucky to get that kind of harassment.
He wandered off, still laughing, and Dex and Annabelle moved over to one of Monty's private booths. They moved their conversation to a private channel as well, so as not to be interrupted or the victims of eavesdropping.
I took a look at those scans Bish sent over, Annabelle said.
And?
There doesn't seem to be anything wrong with their system, Annabelle continued, a fresh drink appearing in front of her. The technician ran all the scans I would have, and a few I hadn't even thought of yet.
The hardware and wetware is working correctly. The tech tested each node offline, and everything was kosher. Since we don't have any hard data on what happened while Bish was experiencing her online blackout, we don't have any information on the software or network end. Dex thought. It seems interesting that she's had several experiences like this in a relatively short time. You think there's a strong likelihood that she'll have another? Annabelle looked up sharply and grinned. Of course, she said. We could fit her out with a monitoring program and hope to get some bites as it happens. She leaned over the table and kissed Dex hard on the mouth. You're a genius. Thanks, he said. I was just thinking out loud. Well, keep thinking, Annabelle said. I'll gin up a monitoring script, something she can run entirely locally. And you should probably give her some kind of physical world access info, too, just in case the worst happens. Well, she already has my address, Dex said, grinning wryly. She is my landlord, after all.
Chapter 8.
Are you sure that this script is safe? Stella Bish sat on Dex's client chair, wearing a gold trouser suit that hugged her impossible curves as tightly as a terrified four-year-old hugged his teddy bear. My best programmer designed it specifically for your system, Dex assured her. He wanted to add, how safe does it need to be considering what you're trying to avoid? I'm told it's safer than walking into your average bar or a restaurant in M-City. Well, Bish said, wrinkling her nose, I don't know how much better that makes me feel. She took the small envelope from Dex, which was the manifestation of the program Annabelle had designed to monitor her activities online. If there are any things you don't want us to be able to see, Dex continued, there's a force delete function. You'd need to use it after logging out of the net, and if the script detects anything unusual in the login or out process, the delete function is disabled. Why is that? Bish asked. We just want to be sure that whatever is happening to you when you're online isn't going to try and hijack the script to remove traces of itself, Dex said. It is, as always, entirely up to you whether or not you share the data with us. The information the script collects can't be passed online without a full uninstall, which you have to do offline. You're in complete control, Ms. Bish, Dex reassured her. That is just how I like it, Bish said, her eyes lighting on Dex in a very uncomfortable manner. Very well, she said, placing the envelope in her small clutch purse. I will contact you immediately if anything untoward occurs. She stood and began to walk to the door. One more thing, Dex said, standing. Yes? Bish turned, taking a step closer to Dex so that her mouth was almost brushing against his cheek. Dex ignored it as best he could. If the worst happens, he said, and you can't get online at all, you can get a message to me through these people. He gave her a contact card for Gabriel Van Moor, the Guadalajara squad captain. I'm told that Mr. Van Moor can usually be found at Emilio's Cantina most nights. Let's hope it doesn't come to that, she purred, and then said, Thank you. I appreciate the forethought. Take care, Ms. Bish, Dex said, stepping back to let her out the door. Speak with you soon. Dex wasn't entirely certain what it was about Stella Bish that made him feel like an adolescent. He was sure that it wasn't specifically for him that she turned on the charm. He'd seen her interact with other people, and it was always the same. It was just how she operated, dripping sex appeal while taking care of her business interests with surgical precision. And none of that bothered Dex. He spent enough time in the seedy parts of M-City to be immune to the come-ons of every imaginable kind, and some that were quite unimaginable. And he had nothing against her business endeavors, either. In fact, if his skills were of a different sort, he'd be quite happy to work with Bish. But there was definitely something about her that made him blush. He wasn't attracted to her, at least he didn't think he was. He certainly wasn't on the prowl, and he couldn't imagine any woman turning his eye from Annabelle. But every time he had to interact with Stella Bish, Dex felt like he had to take a cold shower after, both to clean off and cool off. It was disconcerting. He spent a few minutes staring out the window in his office, enjoying the seemingly random images scroll past. Then he decided that he could just as easily look at the real thing and logged off. He sat in his chair and looked out of the window of his apartment. He didn't have much of a view. He mostly looked at the wall of the South Tower, but if he angled himself just right, he could see down into the courtyard. The sun was low in the sky, and the courtyard was buzzing with activity. He craned his neck and saw that several dozen people were mingling and chatting. He went online briefly and paged over to the private board for his building. He saw that a group of his neighbors had organized a get-together. What the hell, he thought. He wasn't planning on visiting the LOS temple until later, because he wanted Annabelle to come with him, and he'd have to wait until she got off work. He could afford to take off for a couple hours now, he figured, and changed into going out clothes. He checked himself over in the mirror and decided that there was nothing too terrifying to be seen there, and grabbed his mandolin. He recognized a few of the other people at the party, having attended a couple of these mixers in the past. He headed straight for Zeke Torres, his next-door neighbor. Zeke and Dex kept dissimilar hours, so they rarely saw one another, but they got on well. Zeke was a hotshot game designer, but in his off hours he played the theremin, and it was the music which drew Dex to the man. "Hey, Dex," Torres said, embracing Dex and favoring him with a double cheek kiss. The first time Torres had greeted Dex in this manner, he'd been at a loss as to how to react. Now, he was used to Zeke's desire to make every physical world encounter particularly physical, and he was beginning to appreciate the contact. "Zeke," Dex said, "how are things going? I haven't seen you much lately." "Big deadline on zombie lunch hour," Zeke said, referring to the M-City multiplayer game he was currently working on. "You'd be amazed at how complex rendering splatter pattern is. Visuals are okay, but it's creating the feel of the gore rainfall that's the tough part." "Has anyone ever mentioned that you were a deeply disturbed individual?" Dex asked. "Only you, buddy," Torres said and laughed. He looked down at the case at Dex's feet and asked, "So, you came down to play?" "I was hoping to get a jam going," Dex admitted, "if anyone's up for it." "Always," Torres said. "Let's see if we can round up the usual suspects." He walked over to one of the benches and climbed on the seat. "Oi!" he shouted. "Anyone up for playing a little music? Bring your instruments over here and we'll do it up. Thanks." He climbed down and grinned at Dex. "That ought to take care of it." Four other people eventually joined Dex and Zeke, and the six of them played for a couple of hours. The sun had been down for a while when Dex begged off from another song. "Sorry, gang," he apologized. "I'm on an American time and I have to go back to work." "What a shame," Nomi Peterson, the flautist, said. "We were just getting into it." "Maybe next time," Dex said, closing the lid on his case and standing. "It was fun." He walked back to the lobby of his tower, listening to the harmonies his neighbors were making out on the courtyard. He looked over his shoulder, watching them play and laugh together. He wished he was staying, but he knew that he still had work to do. As he spiraled up to the 11th floor, he thought back to his life just a year previously, living in an anonymous, corporately supplied apartment, with no friends in the physical world at all, and only Annabelle online. He'd been alone for so long that it never even occurred to him that there was any other way for him to live. Now he could hardly imagine that his life had been so empty. As he walked into his apartment, he shook his head, marveling at the changes his life had taken. He used the lav, washed his face, and sat down. He had a couple of hours before he would meet Annabelle at the light of the Simulacrum Temple, and he logged into the Cubicle Men system to check the case files. He found an urgent message waiting for him, and followed the link it gave him. It was the file where people were reporting the strange occurrences they encountered online. It had some entries already. In fact, as Dex quickly paged through the file, he saw that it had an awful lot of entries. "It seems like there are three main categories," Annabelle said. She was talking to Dex in a voice-only channel, still at work but looking at the case file on the Cubicle Men system. Theoretically, since she was inside her employer's firewall, she couldn't access anything outside of the firm's internal system. Practically, there was very little security that a programmer with Annabelle's skills couldn't defeat. Indeed, every member of the Cubicle Men had a small onboard program which allowed them to get out from any corporate firewall, leaving no traces. Most of Dex and Annabelle's colleagues held positions much lower on the food chain than Annabelle's lead programmer role. Most people kept corporate jobs for the easy access to housing and other benefits, and there were some advantages to having people inside the firms. But for most of the detectives, technicians, and street team, their jobs with the organization were much more important than their corporate positions. Annabelle was an exception. She liked her job, and if she'd had to choose between working for OmniTrack or for the Cubicle Men, it would be a terrible choice. However, she was talented enough to manage her duties in both posts. Dex often wondered what else she was doing while she was talking to him when she was still on the clock. He was sure she could easily manage two complex tasks at the same time, while he found it tricky enough to follow a map on his visual overlay and still walk in a straight line down the street. "I've lumped the observations into three kinds," Annabelle went on. "I'm calling them image distortions, procedural errors, and off-target links. There are a lot more of the first kind, but it's possible that it's just observational bias.
In English, please, Dex requested.
Sorry, Annabelle laughed. There are a lot more reports of things looking wrong. This is the zone where an extortion ring would be operating, but it includes everything from obviously vandalized property to people reporting that they were sure their pet cat was blue yesterday and now it's purple.
So you think that there is some kind of organized extortion ring going on?
She shrugged. No way of knowing from these reports. These kinds of anomalies are more common just because they're the kinds of things that people notice and report. If your house is burned down, it's hard to ignore. Even the subtle stuff is the kind of thing people talk about, even if they don't really believe that anything's wrong.
Okay, Dex said. I can see that. So what kind of stuff falls into the other categories?
I'm calling it a procedural error when a person just can't log on to the system. What happened to Stella Bish, for example? Or this one case of this guy who tried to link from one part of M-City to another and nothing happened. He was still online, still in M-City, and able to access everything from his original space, but the link didn't work. These are events where it appears, to my mind anyway, that the commands just aren't functioning. Which is subtly different from the user's perspective, but entirely different from a back-end view, from the off-target link events.
Let me guess, Dex said. That's where I try to go to Monty's, but end up in someone's backyard?
Bingo, Annabelle said. Again, there aren't many of these reports in the bucket. But I suspect that it's because when it happens, you just assumed you punched in the code wrong. It's hard to know how many of these there really are. And this is definitely not the work of some kind of shakedown crew. There's not much percentage in a threat that's so subtle you don't know if it's even real.
Well, it seems to me there's a hell of a lot more going on than we guessed, Dex said. Even if we are managing to get every event reported.
Absolutely, Annabelle said, and there's no way we're even scratching the surface. There was silence for a moment, then she came back on the call.
I don't know what this is, Dex, she said, her voice hard, but it's bad. Very, very bad.
You've been listening to The Beauty of Our Weapons by M. Darusha Wayne. For more information about this and the other Anderson Dexter stories, please visit darusha.ca/dex. The theme music is First We Take Manhattan, performed by Donovan Alex and Yoko Rocks. More information at soundcloud.com/donovan-alex. Thanks for listening.